SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back, hour two at the races on this Tuesday, and even before chasing yesterday's win Saturday at Losail, the grade one win, and now has chasing yesterday on a nice three-race win streak, and even before the victory, I wanted to have an opportunity to bring Jane Lyon to the show, and perfect. Things worked out really nicely because not only do we get to have her, I was lucky enough to be able to spend minutes ahead of the race with a very nervous Jane Lyon, and she joins us now. Jane, congratulations again.
Thank you so very much, Steve. It was an extremely exciting day and obviously an emotional day for me.
Well, and Bob said she gets nervous. She gets worked up before these races.
It's sort of a joke with us because I'm really fairly new to winning races on my own. And I hope that my nervousness will, I can get a handle on it in time, but I can't guarantee it.
Well, this is special, too, because when you have a horse like this and when you have a dam like Little Princess Emma and, you know, a sibling to a Triple Crown winner, now that we've got, you know, two contemporary Triple Crown winners, there's the importance, quote unquote, but the importance of having her get black type and be a grade one winner, that's kind of secondary in some ways, you know, to the affection and how attached that you get to the horses. And you roll up your sleeves and you're there when these babies are coming out.
I am as often as I can be. If I am in Kentucky, I will be at the barn when the mare's foal, regardless of the time, because these are my passion. And I love my mares. I don't know if you've heard the rumor that I don't sell my old mares, but it's true. I feel like when a mare is getting too old to breed, she doesn't need to be sent down the line. So I retire them at my farm. And so I have an ongoing relationship with all of my mares. And that, to me, is the best part of this business.
And that is, you know, it's interesting you bring this up, and it, you know, it's kind of the end of the life cycle, but it is a topic that when Dr. Alday, when he and I have talked about the reproductive portion, it has bothered me quite a bit, actually, that as opposed to the stallions, when they're taken out of stallion service to live out their days, but the brood mares, you don't nearly hear as many, you know, that when they get to an advanced age, and that can be in the late teens and then into, you know, early 20s, I get the sense that not nearly as many get to live out their days as much as we hear about them, you know, at the end of, you know, delivering their last foal. And it is really to your credit that, you know, when you decide a mare's had enough, you let them enjoy them real retirement.
Well, I do understand from a business standpoint why so many farms do sell aging mares. They feel like that they are not productive for their program. And it does make sense. However, my mares, I feel like by the time we make the decision or they make the decision that their breeding days are over, that they owe me nothing at that point. And I'm fortunate enough to have enough property and that I can just retire them and make sure that they're cared for to the best of our ability for the rest of their lives.
Let's circle back to the origins, and you've been involved on the commercial side for now it's about 20 years, right? The mid-90s?
It's actually a little more than 20 years, but who's counting? it actually will be 24 years next year. We bought the farm in 1995, and my husband bought it because it was my passion, and to his credit, he was not a huge horse fan and certainly not a huge horse business fan, because he was a wonderful businessman who expected profits every year. And all of us in this business realized that that rarely happens, that you get a profit every year in this business. And I don't care, unless, of course, you own stallions. And I think that's probably the direction that most people in the business are going or will go, because it is the most profitable area. But hopefully maybe one day I'll have a horse that somebody wants as a stallion. I might have a couple in my pocket. I don't know.
Well, you clearly, you know, you're on your way, and we'll talk about, you know, some of the mail side, you know, particularly because you had a magical year. And it's amazing to me, Jane, how often, and Sid Fernando is on with us every Wednesday, and we do our Hill and Dale Pedigree Focus, and it is remarkable how often we find breeding operations, things, you know, kind of gelling at a certain point, and whether it's the, you know, whether it's serendipitous or whether it's the, you know, luck is the residue of design, however you look at it, it is amazing. You are churning out now, you know, a lot of graded stake performers. And the last couple of days, people have heard about Chasing Yesterday. And, of course, at Breeders' Cup, when Game Winner won on Friday, won the juvenile, there was potential for you to sweep the juvenile and as a breeder and the classic, because McKinsey, out of your runway model, you've got Magic on Tap, you had Moonshine Memories. It's been a heady couple of years.
Well, it was a long time coming, Steve, because in all the years, I tried to buy the best mares I could, and I got very fortunate. Little Princess Emma was a prime example, but prior to that, I owned the mothers of Skip Away, Favorite Trick, a number of other great horses, dams, but I didn't breed those horses. And unfortunately, a number of those mares were sort of one-trick wonders, and I did not produce any grade one foals out of those horses. Now, I don't know if it's just timing. I don't know if I've got an angel up there on my shoulder, but since last year when Moonshine Memories began to win her graded stakes, that was the first grade one horse I had ever personally bred at our farm, even with some wonderful mares. And Moonshine Memory's mother was a homebred of mine, and she was a sister to Favorite Trick, and had not produced she had produced winners, yes, but not a horse of the caliber of Moonshine Memories. And she was getting a bit older, as was Runway Model. I had actually retired Runway Model after her last foal, and then McKenzie hit. So you know, I have to hand it to the good old girls, because a lot of my success has been from mares who most people would have sold or given up on. And I don't know, I consider that an added blessing.
And you've also been fortuitous and certainly forward thinking with some broodmare, you know, even pricey, even seven figure broodmare purchases, and Little Princess M is probably the most the most shining example, because obviously she wouldn't have fetched what she did after the fact, but American Pharoah was on the shelf as a 2 year old, and there was a real uncertainty as to when we were going to see him again. The great disappointment. We were at Santa Anita that day when Baffert had to face media and was so dejected that American Pharoah wasn't going to be able to run in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile. And you swept in and picked off Little Princess Emma that November.
Well, that was sort of the beginning of a change of policy in the way we were trying to improve our broodmare band. I had bought a number of really high-priced grade one fillies off the track carrying their first foals, and frankly had been very disappointed in their offspring overall. So we decided that we were going to start buying producers. And because Little Princess Emma had already, American Pharoah had already won two grade ones as a 2 year old, she was obviously a producer, and you could never take that away from her. And I'm very, very grateful that American Pharoah had that slight injury, because I would have never had the opportunity to pick up Little Princess Emma. And when I saw her, it was like, you know, sort of love at first sight. We looked at three mares that night, and I bought two of them, and Little Princess Emma was one that I knew I had to have. Her demeanor, her physical looks, everything about her just really struck a chord with me. And then to have American Pharoah become the fabulous champion that he is, and the first Triple Crown winner in 37 years, was a magical year for me and for my husband, who sadly passed away 1 week after Pharoah's Breeders' Cup win. And it was it was a gift. That whole year was a gift. And to have had the mother and to be peripherally a part of that was a blessing.
Explain your philosophy and how it did change, because whether it was Little Princess Emma or Aubie K, some of the other mares, you were having success, and when you think about Unenchanted Evening getting Moonshine Memories, Unenchanted Evening was a homebred, so a second generation off the farm, and so it wasn't as if you weren't getting production out of the approach, but what was the budget consideration to go get high profile mares, and also I'd love for you to talk about your own research, because I know you're thorough and you love that part of it, but some of the people that you rely on, talk how that approach has changed.
Well, it has changed dramatically, because before I sort of relied on myself and my son-in-law, whom I'm very grateful to, we would just kind of go over pedigrees, and we were primarily commercial, so we had to take into consideration the stallions that were hot at the moment, and we did have a lot of success in the sale ring. We were fortunate enough 1 year to have both the sales copper at Saratoga and Keeneland in the same year. But sadly, neither of those horses became champions or even very good race horses. And so just because they look good and had the right pedigree, we all know, doesn't mean they can run. And yes, we had some running success. We had stakes winners. We had horses that showed up in the Breeders' Cup and in some of the Triple Crown races that we bred, but we didn't own any of those. And that was wonderful. But to have a grade one that we actually bred on the farm was always a goal, and it was something that we were missing. And so a producer has proven herself a mare. And if they have decent-looking babies, people will continue to buy them. And that is also a very good commercial decision to make, because the beautiful grade one fillies that you buy, you give them 2 or 3, 4 years and they don't produce anything, and people really don't really care what that mare's done anymore because she's not doing it in the breeding shed. So that sort of was the genesis of our decision to go more toward producing mares. We will buy the good, beautiful, physical young mare on occasion. We haven't stopped doing that. We just changed our focus a little bit.
You talk about your son-in-law and the farm, of course, in Georgetown, the operation, and some of the decision making on the matches. Talk about how you approach that, because commercial stallions obviously get first priority, but I'm sure there's a little bit of experimentation and dice rolling that goes on as well.
Well, actually, My farm management has changed in the last year and a half, and I have employed some pedigree experts that help us now, because no one knows everything, and no one really knows enough in the business. But if you put all the people that know are really experts in different areas, then you end up with, I think, a very good team. And that is what we are trying to focus on now. And I'm extremely pleased with our team. And we are also putting a lot more thought into our matings as to not only what will sell, but what will produce runners. Because in this business, sometimes you hear, well, do you want a sales horse or do you want a runner? Well, to me, that just doesn't make any sense, because you've got to have both.
Absolute, and the best way to the best way to build the kind of reputation that the farm is getting is to produce these horses that are now seemingly coming with with a regularity. And when you're producing McKinsey's and Game Winners and Moonshine Memories at Chasing Yesterday's, that's going to attract the attention. I asked, in fact, I asked Bob even before Chasing Yesterday. I'm thinking about, I think after the Breeders' Cup, I may have asked the question about latching on to your, to your fountainhead of young horses, and the fact that he was campaigning and came to Breeders' Cup with Game Winner and McKinsey, I thought was really notable. And of course, he's done this a couple of different times. He did it with the Clear Sky people as well.
Well, I think Bob had no idea, and I certainly had no idea, that McKenzie or Game Winner or horses I had bred before they hit the media, because the names were changed. And frankly, like I said, I had retired Runway Model because I'd almost given up on her being a real commercial mare, even though she herself was a very good racehorse.
Yes,
and
she
we
was.
Ended up paying a lot of money for her. And I hope Bob won't mind me retelling this story. But I had been visiting a little bit with Bob because after American Pharoah, or during American Pharoah's campaign, I already had the full brother to him. So I was talking to him about this colt occasionally. And one day I was getting phone calls from Bob. And that was extremely unusual. And I spoke with him, and he said, you know, Jane, he said, sometime I buy older mares, you know, and whatnot, and you've got a mare I might be interested in. And I asked who she was, and it was Runway Model. Well, McKenzie had not raced yet. I did not know who McKenzie was. I did not even know Bob had him. And but I thought, this is pretty interesting. So I said, well, I have retired that mare, Bob. I said, you know, she's 15, 16 years old. She hasn't produced, and I have retired her. She had a baby that year, but I had not bred her. And I said, and frankly, I just don't sell my old mares. And so we were talking, and I said, I might consider, he said, we talked about perhaps doing a foal share with her. And I said, well, I might consider that. Well, anyway, I think it was a day or two, and McKenzie broke his maiden, and everybody was talking about McKenzie. And, you know, I'm blonde and whatnot. And I thought, well, a light bulb sort of went on. So, and he teases me all the time now about trying to steal that mare from me. But it's wonderful because I sent yesterday to him. And also at that time, I had not planned to keep Magic on Tap. Magic on Tap was Aubie K's second foal and had was hopefully going to be our best sales colt. And he was at Keeneland coming out of the trailer to be sold, and something startled him, and he kicked and tore half of his foot off, his hind foot. It was gruesome. And so we had no choice but to load him up, bring him home, and hang on to him. So we did that, and I had, I personally prefer not to sell two-year-old in training sales, simply because I know it's a big part of the business, but I think a two-year-old should be able to progress at his own rate and not get pushed. So anyway, here we have this colt who's totally healed and he's very attractive, and so I send him and Chasing Yesterday and another filly down to Eddie Woods. And Bob went down there before one of the two-year-old sales, and I asked him to please take a look at our horses, and he did, and he started texting me about the Tappet colt and not so much Chasing Yesterday. And so he texted, and so finally that evening he called me, and he was talking about this Tappet colt and how much he liked him. And I said, well, are you saying you want to train this colt? And he said, yes. And so That's how I ended up keeping and sending Magic to Tap, to Bob, Magic on Tap. So it's all sort of been almost like a comedy, but just, you know, serendipity and good fortune, the way things have turned out.
And, he talked about that yesterday, Jane, and he and he was laughing because he basically said you sniffed him out and that you know, it didn't take you long to connect the dots when it came to, you know, what he was up to. And it's funny because I have asked him with all the stallions that he's made, you know, typically a trainer will get one or two seasons to the stallion, and he really does not do a tremendous amount of, you know, just he's got a couple it seems that he'll, you know, he'll breed, but you know, not nearly to the extent that you might expect, you know, with all the stallions that he's got out there. He says he mostly sells them. We discussed that a mm-hmm. few weeks ago. He'll sell those seasons or give them to some of his clients. But, you know, clearly you guys are on a roll together, and it's exciting. I mean, and some, you know, some under your, you know, under your silks, and then for the clients. And what this always seems to do, the success, it kind of begets the success too, because you know, once you start to produce like this, people seek out, you know, your produce, and you know, it's really as you explain, it's the culmination of, you know, of two dozen years of work.
Well, it has been the best year as far as for me personally, because one, becoming not just a client, but I believe friends with Bob and Jill, and we have, I think, a really good relationship, and I'm so comfortable knowing that my horses are cared for, and with Bobby Spaulding, my farm manager, who has been a friend for many, many years of both myself and Frank, I'm confident that my horses are being cared for the way I want them cared for if I'm not there. And it's the first time in ever, really, that I have been enjoying this business like I am now. And I'm getting a little old, and so I really, really want to do a whole lot while I'm still around and kicking. So I think this is the way to do it.
You mentioned Bobby Spaulding, and he had the long association with the Stoner side, with the McNairs.
Stoner side, and yes, and with Darley. And Bobby had been a good friend of ours, my husband and myself, almost since we got in the business. And of course, Bobby would have. My husband really would have enjoyed hiring Bobby years before, but, you know, it's a little tough to have a farm with about 10 brood mares and lure somebody away from a Stoner side or Charlie. But at any rate, we were very, very fortunate because at the time when my family, my daughter and son-in-law, decided probably it was time for them to do their own thing and go their own direction, which I think is a good thing. I think people, families need to have their own focus. It turned out that it was a time when Bobby was about to have his second and third grandchildren, and he had been foaling up to 200 mares a year, and he said, you know, I really am looking to slow down a little bit. And so it was kind of like Magic on Tap, you know. It was something that no one could have predicted happening, but it to me it's a miracle, it's a gift that everything came together as it did when it did. And so I couldn't be more pleased.
I also, it's funny because Bobby's name has come up quite a bit just in the last 2-3 weeks with the passing of Mr. McNair. And
yes.
In fact, he and I, we tried to connect a couple of weeks ago, and he was traveling. And so I wanted him to come and visit to talk about, the Stoner side days and then subsequently. And I didn't realize that he had moved to, he'd moved to your
right,
farm. It's tremendous.
Yes.
Outstanding.
It is. And it was, like I said, it was, and the most beautiful thing of the whole thing is I'm still wonderful friends with all the Darley people. And I was afraid that I would be persona non grata forever to them when Bobby left and came to Summerwind, but that's all worked out perfectly as well.
I want you to you mentioned your daughter Karen, and
yes,
we should absolutely point out the work that she does with Kentucky Wildlife Center.
Well, it's more than Kentucky Wildlife Center. Karen is involved in getting closer to finishing her PhD at the University of Georgia in infectious disease in the vet school there. And she got involved and interested in all this with her wildlife center. And she started noticing different illnesses in these babies that were brought in. And actually, I'm very proud to say, she discovered a new form, or a form that had previously not been discovered, of parvovirus occurring in raccoons. And so she's very, very brilliant, and she kind of thinks outside the box. And so I am very excited and hopeful that her career and her gifts to animals, horses, wildlife, will be seen in the future in helping to discover ways to keep them healthier and to keep different diseases from jumping species. So, she is. I'm very proud of her and her focus and her abilities. That when she tries to tell me what she's doing, I just look kind of blankly and say, "Honey, I'm sorry, you've already lost me."
I love it. And for those that want to see what Karen Bailey has done, the KYWildlife.org, Kentucky Wildlife.
Right.
.org, and they rehabilitate injured animals, and you see this really in all over, and it's a beautiful, actually the website's gorgeous, and for those that are in the area,
right,
they certainly in Lexington are aware of it. And how much, speaking of Lexington, you basically are I didn't realize that you're still back and forth between Little Rock and Lexington.
Well, I am an Arkansas resident, and Frank and I were both born and raised in Little Rock, Arkansas. And all of his businesses were originally based here. And so, we still have a farm, an agricultural farm, and also, I might add, an extremely good duck hunting farm in Arkansas, as well as other businesses that are still ongoing here. And so the estate is housed here. And my other daughter, Ashley, who I believe you met, she and her family live here, as well as my sister and lots of friends and cousins and everything. So I live in both places. But I did tell my husband one time, I think my soul lives in Kentucky.
Well, and certainly, you know, certainly the growth and the success of Summer Wind, there's going to be a lot more time to spend. And are we going to see you at Oaklawn? How often do you get down to Hot Springs?
Well, actually, very rarely, and I probably shouldn't admit this, but I don't go to the races a lot, and my demeanor that you witnessed on Saturday is part of the reason, because I get so afraid, you know, that something might happen, or I can hardly watch my own horses race, but I'm great watching the replays after they win.
Well,
I know everything's well.
Well, and I'm sure you watch. It was funny too watching at Los Al because it's such an unusual layout. The elongated paperclip that we kind of describe it, and the sharp turns, and so being in a position, if you're not up high, if you're not in the Vessels Club or in the grandstand, it's hard to really follow the action from ground level. And you were kind of trying to figure out where are we going to watch this from, and when you got the chance to kind of catch her off the turn, and it became obvious that she was clearly just kind of grinding away and making progress and really really only corralled the leaders fairly late. I mean, it was a pretty thrilling stretch run, Jane.
Oh, I know. It really was. And probably it is just as well that I couldn't watch her all the way around because I would have been so panicked when she was, taking her last and I think third turn wide and was still quite bit out of it. And the lovely fillies that were in the front, I probably would have panicked just a little bit. So I think it was pretty good that I didn't actually was not in a place where I could see what was going on behind the track.
Well, once she got to her stable mate to mother, and then of course the O'Neill horse was absolutely plugging away with Mike Smith.
She was amazing. Yes.
Yeah. She ran a big race, and we found out later, Smith had told Baffert that was a serious filly, and that
yes.
He was actually excited to be riding her for Doug. But one of the things that is notable is, and this we see this all the time with siblings. Yes, she's out of Little Princess Emma. Yes, she's the sister of American Pharoah. She doesn't run anything like him. She is a so much a one-paced, distance-oriented, and she's going to get better as these races stretch out. The mile and the eighth and the beyond is really what she wants, and I think it became very understandable why the trip to Saratoga didn't go well. It was a lot to ask in a second start, but 7/8, really... against maybe more fleet and precocious fillies, this is exciting because she's a major player for the Oaks as she matures.
Well, I certainly hope so. And actually, I have to defend her a touch about the race at Saratoga because she lost the shoe very early, perhaps coming out of the gate, her front shoe. And then she got behind that wall of horses and was inhaling so much of that deep dirt that, she kind of panicked a little bit, I think. But at any rate, hopefully that will be nothing more than a learning experience for her.
Well, her brother got beat a couple of times too. So
he did, and
it didn't hurt him in the long run.
No, and although they both, and I think yesterday has speed as well, but Bob told me the first time that he worked her that he thought she would be able to do a distance, And, you know, in fact, he texted me. He texted me from New York the night before the Belmont. And apparently they had just worked yesterday. And he was going on about how excited he was and how good he thought she was. And I said, well, Bob, I said, don't you have a couple other things on your mind right now? And he said, yeah, next year's Kentucky Oaks. So that was before the filly ever ran.
Well, it just shows you, too. I mean, that here it is the night before. Justify's going to try for the Triple Crown, and he's planting seeds and keeping you advised of the progress of the other big horse. One thing about her we should ask, too, before we wrap up. American Pharoah, and I've certainly, you know, been at the front of stalls and played with plenty of horses. I've also had a few, you know, tried to take a bite. American Pharoah famously was like a collie. And how is she to be around yesterday?
She's exactly like him. And that was one thing I think that has impressed all of us. But frankly, all of Little Princess Emma's foals have been very, very people-oriented and really have great dispositions. And the mare herself is like, she's like a lap dog almost. When she foals and I'm in the stall with her, and I get the job of rubbing the babies off with towels and kind of semi-imprinting them. It's not uncommon for her to lay down, be there, and lick the baby, and then give me a lick at the same time. And so, I mean, she is a joy to be around. And I don't think I have ever seen that mare put an ear back. And so she is imparting that into her foals.
Hey, you've got another, in addition to St. Patrick's Day and American Cleopatra, there is another pioneer of the Nile, Prince of Thebes. And there's also Triple Tap, which is now going to be the full brother of Chasing Yesterday. So
yes.
a pair of siblings for Pharoah and Yesterday. And just in terms of progress, Weanling and the Yearling, give everybody an update on the two of them.
Well, the Weanling is spectacular. He is large. He's got long legs. He is pretty much perfectly conformed. We've had a number of people out to look at him. He has got a little bit more. I don't know if it's tappet or just hormones because he's a colt. He's not quite as huggable and lovable as Yesterday is, but he is not a mean colt by any stretch. Unfortunately, the Prince of Thebes has Pharaoh's body. He looks very much like Pharaoh. But he injured himself as a baby, and we are so he obviously wasn't a sales option. But we have worked with him, and I'm hopeful that we will be able to send him to Eddie Woods at the first of the year and just see how he will hold up to training. If he doesn't. I'll have him come home, and he will just be another one of my horses. It's a shame things like this happen, but he won't be pushed, and he crushed a growth plate, and so he's crooked, and it may not even stop him from running, but. You know, we're going to give him an opportunity, and if he can, that's great. But If not, that's okay too.
Well, even under those circumstances, and even if he is not able to race, I mean, as a full brother, and he happens to be a bay, right?
He is. He is a plain bay, very much like he looks very much like Phalo.
Right.
And and the colt that we sold, who became St. Patrick's Day, he was a bay, but he was more like Emma. And yesterday, he had a lot of white, and he was very flashy. But he was a bay also, and then when yesterday was born, she's the color of her mother, and so is Triple Tap. And Triple Tap is named because we discovered that Tappet, Little Princess Emma, and this foal were all born on the same day.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is
to be recognized.
that's pretty crazy.
It is, isn't it?
Yes, it's given the vagaries of terms, that's unbelievable.
It really was. And so, you know, I had toyed with a lot of really, you know, fancy names and everything, and then when we did the research and discovered that, and I said, well, it's not my favorite name, but it has to be this. You know,
wow.
It just has to be.
Well, that's unbelievable. The one element, I'm going to suggest the Spanish Steps tie, the full brother of Unbridled Song, who, you know, who got a chance to be a stallion and got mm-hmm. useful horses. I mean, certainly, even if Thebes isn't able to run, he's going to attract a chance at stud.
Right. Well, I would hope so, because this is no fault of his own, and or his sires or his dam, you know. And so, it, you know, like I said, we'll see what happens. But, you know, nobody's pushing him. And he also has a wonderful disposition, the Prince of Thebes.
Well, and that's one of the things when it's come to American Pharoah, and you know, everybody wondering whether a horse like this is going to pass on the physical prowess. The thing that I have maintained, and Sid Fernando and I have talked about it, and I have brought it up with Baffert too. When you think about the knock on Stormcat and the, you know, the kind of wildness that he passed along to his foals, if American Pharoah is going to pass on that disposition and you know, the ease with which horsemen can work with the progeny, that's an underrated aspect of a stallion's properties, passing along attributes. And it's amazing. I mean, if that's what it's going to be. And the early returns, Jane, seems to be, the early indication is that their disposition, as opposed to young Tappets that are kooky, every indication is that seems to be what's happening.
Well, I think it is, and I know that Pioneer of the Nile is a fairly good disposition horse, but I have to maintain that Emma has got to be the main source of this. Good-natured disposition, and of course the ones that we have that are also daughters and sons of her are going to have a whole lot better chance, I think, of having those dispositions. I do have an American Pharoah filly out of a Grade One winner that she has that disposition too. So hopefully American Pharoah is going to pass it on.
And I should also ask on that front, American Cleopatra, I know she delivered an Uncle Mo filly. And where who Where is she? Did she? Did the Zayats keep her?
I don't. I believe they do, but I honestly do not know, because I knew that when they put her in the sale, there it was an RNA. But you know, in this business, everybody has a story, and sometimes it doesn't pan out. But you know, we'd heard all these different people had bought her, but apparently that is not true. And as far as I know, the Zients do still own her, but I may be wrong too.
I'll check into that this afternoon. I'll check with Justin or Ahmed and see where she is. And I also want to ask about, you know, because we talked runway model, you ended up putting her back in service, right? She's delivered a couple since Mackenzie.
No. She was pregnant before Mackenzie, and she has, I have a Liam's map filly out of her that I'm keeping. And we tried breeding her back after Mackenzie's races, first races, and she got pregnant. At 30 days or so, she was empty. We bred her back. She got pregnant again. And the very same thing happened. So we had Dr. Christine Liu, who is a guru with reproduction and all these issues, do a complete workup on her, and she says that the mare has scar tissue in her horn, her uterine horns, and so the mare is officially retired. I won't attempt to breed her ever again.
Wow. So the opportunity to pass on with her will be with a Liam's map daughter. That's nice. Well, you know, Runway Model happens to be a horse that that I followed at the time. First of all, I'm a big Passchendaele fan, number one. Mm-hmm. But then Bernie Flint had her, and she was a nice stakes filly, Next spring, I want to go to the farm, Jane, and would love to see her out in the field and give her a minute.
She's a beautiful mare. She is still beautiful, and she does not look her age. And I would absolutely love for you to come to Summerwind Farm, and I would love to get to introduce you to all these wonderful babies and mares that mean so much to me.
Well, I will take you up on that, and I suppose that invites the question people are asking as they listen to you. Jane Lyon with us, Summerwind Farm, Summerwind Equine, and are you part of the Horse Country tours? Can the public visit the farm?
No, we are not part of the Horse Country tours because, for one thing, we don't stand stallions. We are basically very small, and so we are not. But we are very conscious that, you know, horse lovers maybe want to see Emma or some of those horses. And we try to accommodate and let people that, you know, that we know or have a real interest. But as far as having tours come through, no, we don't do that.
Well, you've been accommodating, and what was going to be a 20 or 25 minute visit has turned into an hour. And I know, Jane, you've got a Christmas fundraiser today as well. What's the fundraiser today? You mentioned to me earlier.
Well, it's not a fundraiser. It's a luncheon for Children's Hospital here in Little Rock, and it's a very phenomenal center and very well known, and I'm happy to be going to their luncheon. So,
Jane,
but I'm
going to
have to get
enough.
Dressed.
I'm sorry. Get going, and we will wish you your daughters and sons-in-law and the grandchildren, everybody everybody at Summerwind. You can follow Jane and the farm on Twitter, More Summer Wind, all one contraction. And we wish you just continued success, the merriest of Christmases, and a happy, healthy new year for and healthy babies for all the mayors.
Thank you. Thank you. And the same to you. And I hope to see you again in office.
Without fail. And Jane Lyon, of course, with Summer Wind and the campaigning of Chasing Yesterday and Magic on Tap. And sounds like there's going to be the last of runway models get is going to be in Jane Silks as well. Just a great run of success and 24 years in the making. An overnight success.
That's right.
I love it. That's Summer right. Wind, Jane Lyon. Thank you.
Thank you.
We'll take a timeout here. Top of the hour upon us, and what a fun hour. I was really looking forward to this, and I'm sure it sounded that way. We will come back with another on the ownership side, and they do some breeding. Another name that I've looked forward to having on the show for a number of years, have communicated with the old Wellings, Bill and Al, and Bill's gonna stand in today with Al. Al's in the islands. He's off getting some sun, but we're gonna talk to Bill Ilwelling. They've had a unbelievable year themselves, and you see their horses run Canterbury and through the Mid-American circuit down into fairgrounds. They've got the horses up, a couple horses up in Canada. Pumpkin Rumble has been a consistent stake winner, and then they came back as well over the weekend as part of the Louisiana bred night and had another stake winner. I'm pretty sure they bred, right? I'll have to look back. Bill Ilwelling is going to join us. Stay with us.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Hey, what's going on? Mikey here, and I'm going to tell you about an offer from my good friends at ExpressBet. Let's be honest. We know you love playing the races, but you can't always make it to the track. Sometimes life just gets in the way of a good bet. Well, what if I told you about a place where you never miss a bet and you start with house money? You'd say I'm crazy, right? Well, not at ExpressBet. Your first $100 are on them. That's right. Sign up at ExpressBet.com using promo code XBRadio, bet $100, and they'll deposit $100 back into your account the very next day. Hey, plus you could get an extra $25 if you use ExpressFund Direct Deposit. You see what I mean? House money for betting the races. It's that easy. Check it out at ExpressBet.com to learn more. And don't forget to sign up for promo code XBRadio. You're gonna love it. And that's a Mikey guarantee. Must be 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line, 800-522-4700.
There's more good news about Pennsylvania's breeding program. Last year, the number of state-bred live foals rose by nearly 30%. Many other states saw a drop of between 10 and 20%. This says that Pennsylvania truly has North America's fastest growing and most lucrative breeding program. And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is Brian Sanfratello. Please visit us at PABred.com.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the five Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.